Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Liquor Barn Studios, it's time for the V Show, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Bobby V.
Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the V Show. A lot of stuff to do here today. A bunch of stuff that I actually omitted yesterday, amazingly. Not that it's amazing. I could omit something. I do that all the time. But amazing amount of stuff. Including right now, to be honest with you, while we're delighted to have you here with us, and we'll keep you updated, but Louisville is playing right now in the men's baseball tournament in the ACC, and that game is actually on our sister station, 93.9. So if you want to hear what's going on, but in the meantime, we will bring you updates as we go here, so we'll keep you posted on what's going on. That starting time, I think, was an hour ago, 11 o'clock this morning, I think, but again, wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong. Louisville finished with a 32-22 regular season record. They swept Notre Dame in the last regular season series, so they went up 16-14 in the conference, and now they play in this, which I think is a very clever way to do it, but they're at a disadvantage. You're put in three-team pods. They go by the standings, so it goes like a reverse snake. So it's 1-2-3-4, and then going back. That was left to right, then right to left would be 5-4-3, 5-6-7-8, and then down to late 9-10-12, so top 12 teams. You play the other two teams in your pod, and there's only two scenarios that could play out. Everybody's 1-1. Somebody is 2-0. One team is 1-1, and the other team's 0-2. That's the only scenario. It's possible mathematically. What happens is how the regular season becomes such an advantage is if everybody in that pod goes 1-1, the team that was the highest seed goes. I mean, teams 1, 2, 3, and 4. So for Louisville, who did not finish in the top four, they are the middle team of the bunch. Miami, I'm amazed Miami's not better at baseball, but Miami's, I think, 11. Louisville has to win both their games to get to go into the basically the four-team bracket to play for the championship. Semifinals. It'll get you through to the semifinals. It's a very, very clever way to do it so that you're really rewarded for the regular season, but 12 teams can go, and it's not just a straight single elimination. And if you make your trip down there to see your team, you'll see them play two games anyway because they have to play two games. So we'll keep you posted on how they're doing today. So we certainly wish Dan's group well, maybe they can pull it off and go 2-0 and advance at least to the semifinals. So they, as I said, coming off a very good win in the regular season, but sweeping Notre Dame at home. They're playing Miami today, and then they play Clemson. Clemson is the higher seed, so they get them second. So they get Miami today, and my stat broadcast box is loading even as we speak here. So I'll tell you in a moment. Here we go. All right. Well, they are in the bottom of the fourth inning. Louisville trails 3-1. Miami got three in the top of the first. Louisville countered with one in the bottom of the third, and now they play in the top of the fourth with Miami leading 3-1. So we will see if they can come back in this ballgame. So hopefully the Cards are able to do that. We went through a whole show yesterday. There was a lot of meat on the bone. We covered a lot of stuff. It was not quite as silly as we are frequently. But, I mean, there's always going to be silliness. That's impossible not to on this show. But we had stuff. But we didn't even mention the fact that U of L had gotten another transfer portal player over the weekend. So now they have one spot left. And basically, if you look at their roster, and tip of the hat to my boy, the Biggest Biscuit, and Mark Ennis, two really good guys here at the station who did a really good job on their show yesterday on the 93.9 of kind of breaking down the roster, which was really, really a good job of taking a look at things that, you know, what lies ahead. Because if you look at their roster now, they really have all the positions covered. They have one spot left. I don't know, you know, definitely if they will offer it or not. I mean, it's going to be hard to bring a guy in at this stage looking at the roster they've got unless he's great, because chances are he's going to say, well, what kind of playing time am I going to get? But it's not a – I'm not trying to, you know, lick the sprinkles of anybody's cupcake here. I don't think it's a great roster, but it's a darn good roster. Noah Waterman, of course, the guy we're talking about, who comes from Brigham Young, and he becomes the last player, another front court guy. So if you look at their roster, Fred Calgill's just come in the studio. He'll join us here in a minute. We're talking about how when they get Noah Waterman the other day, they've gotten now let's count. Let's play, you know, by position here. Let's leave out Ali Khalifa, who's not going to play next year. He's going to redshirt. So they've got let's call them bigs, points, and wings, okay, to keep it simple. Waterman's a big. Chucky Hepburn's a point. Kaysen Pryor is a wing, so they got 1-1-1. James Scott is a post, a big. So that's two bigs, 2-1-1. Abubakar Traore is a wing, so that's two wings, two bigs. Javon Hadley is a wing, 2-3-1. Terrence Edwards can go either way, as a point guard or a wing. So they basically got two points that they could play and four wings. Corin Johnson is another combo guard, so that makes, if you count each of them at half at each position, that's another point guard and another wing. And so they've got front court guys. I feel like I skipped somebody. Did I? Oh, yeah, I did. No, I didn't. I said Terrence Edwards. Yeah, so they've got Rain Smith's a wing. Yeah, so they've got James Scott's a real true front court guy, and Waterman. So they got two true posts, and they got plenty of wings, and at least three guys who could play the point. So they got a full roster. We'll see if they wind up taking another one. And he said, you know, in 6 weeks we're going to have all roster put together, and it took them like seven, which is amazing. That's why I say, before anybody thinks I'm raining on their parade, I'm not. They started. If I gave them a grade for this roster, and I'm not, they may be great. That's the great thing about the portal. You don't know. Based on what I'm seeing and where they're coming from, it's not an A+. Fred's a professor now in college, so you can understand grading.
Yeah.
But I would say it's probably a B+ roster right now. But having said that, they started at a guy who didn't even show up for class.
Zero.
They started at zero. So it's a dazzling array that they put together. Very impressive.
That's fantastic.
And if they're willing to play hard and pass the ball and they can shoot it, and that's the one thing, God bless Pat's little Kelsey Hart. He brought shooters in. And we are so tired of watching games last year where
don't want to get your hopes up
clank,
too much, but it's promising.
Clank. So very exciting. Fred Calgill joins us. This is, if I'm not mistaken, sorry, but you know, it's like when Kareem Jabbar finished his career, every city he went and played in, they gave him a rocking chair and they gave him a. Yeah. So this is it, right?
Yes, sir.
When's your last day on the air?
Friday at 6.
Wow.
Yeah, here we are.
So how you feeling?
Well, that's a really good question. People have asked me a lot of things over the last, you know, couple of weeks, but I'm not sure anyone's asked me specifically that.
Really?
Yeah. No, it's been a lot of fun. From the Derby, which was a reunion of a lot of old friends and a lot of people saying goodbye, to PGA, which was extremely similar.
And they honored you, by the way, for the people who don't know. Yes. The PGA gave you, they gave you something?
I was blindsided. I really was. I've known these people for a long time. They've become very good friends. 28 years since the PGA in 96. And that was when, you know, frankly, nobody really knew where this was going to go.
True.
So,
yeah, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. There was, when they announced they were coming to Valhalla, there was not a universal hurrah around the world. There was a lot of, wow.
A lot of critics.
Why did they go
There's still critics. There's still critics. So we sort of invented stuff. Tony Pancake, who was the pro at the time, who, ironically, right before I walked in for the ceremony, I ran into Tony and Libby, his wife, who have Annabelle, who's done exceptionally well in college golf. And they've been family friends forever. And I didn't know what I was walking into, but I remember it as such a flashback to 96. And we're like, what if we did like the 18 holes of Valhalla? What if we did like Tony's tips and, you know, did different stuff in the bunkers and all that? And we invented all this stuff just trying to see what it felt like and looked like. And it all blossomed into everything that's happened since. So it was more than ironic. I mean, the big guy upstairs obviously was timing is everything. And for him to be there at that specific moment was more than a God incident. And I walked in and all these old friends are there and they had me up on a podium where all the players sat for all the news conferences and gently roasted me and presented me with a wonderful golf bag embroidered with the seven championships that have been at Valhalla.
Oh, my gosh.
The logos of each. Yeah, and my name.
Was way better than McDonald's gift certificate.
It was very sweet. Now, that'll go in my office. People are like, are you going to use that? I'm going, no, that's going in my office. That represents 28 years of passion and love for a place that I can't totally explain it all. I mean, I guess there are pieces to it. But I got here in 86. I got here in August, went on the air September 1-ish, 86. They were building a new set and waited for me to go on the air until the set was finished. And so I got to go around, meet people, and I went to Valhalla and all those things. And the course literally just opened. And frankly, was a bit Spartan at the time, as new courses are. It's the way it is. You look at helicopter shots of 86 compared to now, it's, you know, you're talking a dramatic change, and rightfully so, over four decades, and all very positive. So, but I fell in love with the place. It represents a lot. It was a dream of a guy named Dwight Gayden, and people laughed at him. He's like, I want to build this golf course on some family property and host championships. And then he reaches out to Jack Nicklaus, and he makes it all happen. But there were so many doubters. And what I admire the most about Mr. Game was that he didn't listen to all the critics. He had a dream and took a shot at it with a lot of money, of his own money, no loans, no nothing, didn't ask for a thing, and built this wonderful golf course with no promise of anything. And fast forward to about 1994-ish, when the PGA first really got wind of it, you know, no houses on the property of consequence, pristine as could be. They're like, we love this place. They hold a championship there. They love it so much the PGA of America bought it. And it's been a love affair ever since. And to that point, they've now handed off, the PGA of America handed off to the four local guys here who have just done an amazingly wonderful job. I mean, there were a lot of critics, again, when these four guys bought the place. You know, they decided to change some things and throw their own money at it, not just to buy it, but to improve it. I mean, oh, my gosh, it's gorgeous. I mean, Irish stone on the driveway going in, white picket fences everywhere, not picket fences, horse fences everywhere. It's just gorgeous. And so to stand there on the green on Sunday night at about 8 o'clock-ish when, you know, they just finished, and Shoffley goes off to his news conferences, and we're out there doing stand-ups, and I couldn't resist. I walked out on the 18th green and stood about where Shoffley stood to make that six-foot putt, took a picture, and just looked around, you know, just like, wow.
Yeah, it's...
It was cool.
There's so many levels, and congratulations again, by the way. Well deserved. You love all sports, and we talk about the Yankees and baseball, and you love basketball. But really, at the closest parts of your heart, I think, are horse racing and golf.
That's fair.
I really think those are the two, you know, that live.
Oh yeah,
share an apartment with you.
That's why I
came
here.
The other two are your neighbors.
That's why I came for horse racing, obviously, and for a job, and fell in love with the place. It's my adopted home. I've been here 38 years. I'm not going anywhere. People are like, are you going to like move to Florida? I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I've been here 38 years. It's because I like it. Love it. And but part of that was Churchill Downs. And then to get the perk of Valhalla, yeah, it was kind of a no-brainer that I got to cover that kind of thing. Played golf in high school, played golf in college, junior college, played a year at Tennessee, played my entire life, as you know, and not very good anymore, but still love the game as much as ever, like you and I have shared more than once. It's just the joy of being out there to see what they did to that golf course those 4 days.
Thing that I'm intrigued by is the people who, you know, get your thoughts on this. The people who criticize, like Vince Cellini, who we both know and I like.
Mm-hmm. Vince, good guy.
I've worked with Vince.
All right.
But he said, you know, minus 21 for a major championship. And I was like, you know what? That's the difference. The U.S. Open, yes, that would be a problem. That's their brand. The U.S. Open wants par as a very good score.
Right.
And they pick courses and set them up in a way where you can do that. For you to do that at this course, you would have had to trick it. You'd have had to trick it up.
And you could have.
And you could have, but that's not really a true
test.
The question is, are your champions the best players? Is it bringing out their best golf? And if it is, then what do you care? Like the Open Championship, I've told this story, I tell it every day, so the listeners are going to get sick, but I always, the story about the British caddy, because they don't care about the score there. They just care who's the champion golfer of the year. So they asked a caddy once a long time ago, what's going to be the winning score of the Open this year? He said, oh, about 300, and if the wind blows, maybe 400. I mean, that's the whole, didn't care. Could not care less.
Yep.
We are just fixated on that. And the reason I bring that up is because, to me, I don't know that Jack really cared about that, but what he did care about was he built a back nine that was set up for drama. He had gone through so many dramatic back nines at Augusta. I'm convinced Augusta was the inspiration.
I think so.
He was like, I'm going to make it so this back nine, man, you are going to have. And every time they come here, that's what they get every single time. So he obviously nailed it. And I don't think he's sitting there going, oh, gosh, 20 under.
I just wish more guys had gone for it at 13 green. They had the chance. It was set up. I mean, Toasty went for it and got it. Spieth went and missed, but it, to your point, on Tuesday or Wednesday, Scotty Scheffler talked before all the things that happened, and he was asked about this. He goes, what do you think of the course and all this? He goes, you know, it's probably going to be a low number. He goes, but if you get hung up on that, you're missing the point. Well, the place is set up for drama. It's set up for a cool, like, risk-reward, who's going to do what, those final four or five holes. And I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of what he said. And I just sort of raised my hand, kind of like thumbs up. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I've heard so many people criticize the course. And, yes, I have a special place in my heart for it. And so, yeah, I am a little prejudiced, but I've played it. And I've seen it, and
it's
I've seen seven events.
It's
a fantastic
spectator.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm amazed with that many people. You
packed.
Could see a lot of golf, and it was mob-olid.
It was the biggest crowd I've ever seen there, and it was uncomfortable at times. I mean, there were times when navigating that was a challenge, and I still saw a lot of golf, which really is quite the compliment given.
Yes.
They've made a lot of improvements to that point for that exact reason.
Vantage points where you can look three different ways.
People, the international national media, oh, it's so easy. It's right in front of you. I'm like, okay. So do you want, you know, a death march for minus one, or do you want a shootout? So I'd said on like Thursday or Friday, like this could very much be a playoff because so many great players are piled up on top of each other. That's what you want. When they made the turn of the back nine, I'm like, here we go. Can Xander hang on? He's being challenged for the lead. You go to 18, challenged for the lead, tied for the lead. You got to make birdie to win it. What are you going to do?
Of shots,
it's what we
too.
Dream about.
I mean, hit a drive that backed up into the bunker on 17.
Yes.
Then had a play on 18
with a baseball swing.
He looked like he was Dorf on golf. You know, the ball was up by his knees.
Exactly right.
It was incredible.
But that's the perfect. This is when we were kids. I remember vividly, you know, late in the afternoon on a Saturday or a Sunday, and everybody's gone except, you know, we're 14 or 15, and me and my best friend, we would put ourselves in that situation. I'm Nicklaus and you're Palmer, or whoever the guys were at the time. And okay, so this is the deal. We're tied going in. What are you going to do? We just forgot the world and let us be them. And had that fun. And I thought of that when Xander I'm on the 18th green. I'm watching him come up. I'm like, he has to have played this in his head 1,000 times. Not this course. Not these circumstances. Excuse me. Not these names. But these circumstances. You need a birdie to win it. You're tied for the lead. What are you going to do? And to his credit, a 6-foot putt, which I thought he missed, and it lipped in.
I thought it was going to lip out too.
Yes,
they had the camera angle right behind the hole, and I said, oh, that's turning.
I almost started crying. I'm like, this is so cool. It's what we, as kids, literally, as we learned the game, dreamed about that someday we might be in that position.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously, except for. And it's not a Mrs. Lincoln other than how'd you like to play. But, I mean, you know, you got the fatality and then the Scheffler thing, which in my mind is just ridiculous. But
it's so unfortunate. I mean, you know, you can't sugarcoat what happened. I mean, it's to have a loss of life for any reason is just horrible. And those unique circumstances even more so. And I think it's important that the correct people who deal with the traffic flow and all that of these events looks at that very seriously and try to understand what happened, what went wrong, and try to fix it. When things go wrong in our shows, I've often said, you know, people will burn a Friday night football show. And it happens, but for no malicious reasons. Things go wrong. And just like in a basketball game, I mean, you know, it's going to happen. The Cards are going to have challenges. And so at the end of the game, you ask yourself some honest questions without pointing fingers. And so when those things happen, I have a meeting right after. And also when they go really well, what went right? How can we improve it? And so I think those things should go on this week, obviously, with
the problem is I don't see how they can. It doesn't seem in any practical way they could build another route into the course the way where it is. I just don't know. Because the one thing I was struck by is when I first came here and the first time I went to Derby, I applauded because I was amazed. Like, I went and parked my car downtown, jumped on a bus, and they had cones basically that went the entire way from downtown to the track.
Correct.
And it was just for buses. Now, you could say, well, that still doesn't mean somebody isn't going to jump in that lane and get hit by a bus. But you know what I mean in terms of the fact that it was really amazingly efficient,
yes,
and given the fact that there's even way more people at the Derby than there were at the golf course. I mean, it's
true.
So you had that. And frankly, coming into a smaller footprint. So they was impressed. But there's different routes to get to Churchill Downs. You don't have to have – I don't know how else you go there. Where else can you turn in? There's really only two places, right?
Right.
There's that place. And then as that morning, the early players that came right after the fatality, they rerouted them all the way around to, like, the other side of the course. The guy said it took them, like, 20 minutes to go from one entrance to the other.
Right.
That's – I don't know. I'm not sure how you can – and the only reason I bring that up is because if you're sitting in a room – in 2028, deciding where are we going to hold the PGA, and they talk about let's go back to Valhalla. Somebody's going to say, "Do we want to run the risk?" I mean, have they made any infrastructure? And guys are like, "Well, they can't."
These are questions that need to be addressed, that need to be asked first of all. And I think smart people in those kinds of positions, I mean, would be asking those questions, not just the PGA of America, and not just Valhalla, but the city of Louisville. That okay, so we have this wonderful asset that we didn't create, but someone else did, and here we have it, and it's created all sorts of national and international exposure, and something went wrong. So is there a way to fix it? I don't know. I know the logistics of that are difficult and challenged, because right now it's just Shelbyville Road. And there were layers to that. So as an example, they said, the people who were running this whole thing said they would not let people walk in. And yet people inevitably park on lawns and all that and walk in. So how do you deal with I don't know. Again, it's above my pay grade. But these are questions that are going to have to be answered. Do you build a bridge over, as an example?
I thought about that. But I also thought of, quite frankly, they spent all that money. And they, because the first year that they had the race at Kentucky Speedway, whatever it was called, and they spent all that money, built a separate exit, that did, because nobody could get to the race the first year.
Yes, and then the first race was a disaster.
And the race left.
Well,
I mean, there's nothing there now.
Well, okay.
So, I mean, safe to say Valhalla's not going away.
Right.
But why would you want to be, you know?
Well, the good news about that, local people came in and bought the place and threw $30 million at it. Not only did they buy it, and told the members, we're not going to assess you anything. We're going to do this. And
so you're talking about Valhalla.
Yeah. Threw $30 million up. They're not going anywhere. So that's the good news. And I do believe, because I've talked to all of them, almost all of them individually, they have big plans. I mean, if the PGA
Share
of America.
Share some of those plans with me. Like, what? Because
I can't
myself,
tell you all of them.
Why did they buy it? I still don't completely understand.
It was a love letter to Kentucky Golf. And
they all love golf.
And they love the place. And they're people of means. And
but
they,
what was,
they play golf
what
together
was
a lot.
Quote unquote wrong with it that they felt they had to fix it?
I don't think anything was wrong with it. They want to make it even better. I mean, look what they've done. I mean, it's spectacular. The clubhouse looks like Augusta National. It's you know, they poured money into the course itself, also to the logistics, the fences, the Irish stone going up. They did some amazing things.
Did they?
The horse.
I only know
below.
Junior, really. I don't know any of the other guys. I know Junior fairly well. I love him to death.
Jimmy Kirchdorf has been more or less the face of it. He's been the engine behind a lot of it, at least from a standpoint of on the front.
But I bring that up only because I don't want to make – I'm not making judgments. I'm asking questions.
Yeah.
But I got the feel – like, do you remember we ran our event there for a few
years? Yes, we did. It was a lot of fun.
I get the impression that they wanted to be more elite. I don't think they want people like – us running outings there.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, I never got that impression. I mean, I'm not saying
Augusta National. They're putting $30 million in. I don't think they're doing it with the idea. Because they got for a while that they opened their doors a little bit yeah, to people that. I think they're closing those doors. I don't know. I can't.
I have no substance to refute that or to support it. All I know is, having talked to these guys a lot, and their hearts are in it, and they're trying to do something really special for the town in a kind of way that Mr. Game did years ago and take it to the next level, they are going to talk to other people. I've talked to two of the four owners, and both of them I said, you know, if the PGA of America doesn't want to come back, that's an if, you know, there are lots of other ways to go with this. I mean, what about the USGA? What about a U.S. Women's Open?
What about a tour event?
What about a tour event, the PGA? So you have these different... People just think, okay, PGA of America, and then they're wonderful people, and they're some of my close friends. But there are like five, give or take, different organizations that could provide an event.
It's never going to be a U.S. Open course. That's impossible. Then it's not. You'd have to make it like a miniature golf course to toughen it up to the standards they want, I think. But how about a tour of it? Like, they're playing the tour, isn't it this week? Aren't they on the course where next year they're playing the PGA? They go to Quail Hollow, don't they?
Quail Hollow is the next site of the PGA Championship in 2020.
And they have a regular tour
event. They were just there last week.
Okay. Oh, that one. But I'm saying they have a tour event.
Yes.
So you can have a tour event and still be on the rotation for Pebble Beach. Yes. Regularly hosts a tour event. And then they
all the above. They won't tell me what it is, but the sparkles in their eyes to two of the owners I talked to, they've got something going on. Okay. They have at some point, they say they're going to have an announcement about the future. We're looking forward to that. But I think at the same time, they have to ask themselves all these same questions. I think a bridge over Shelbyville Road would be the only logical answer that would help solve a lot of these issues.
A pedestrian bridge
over Shelbyville Road that would allow people to get from one side to the other. Doesn't eliminate the problem, but it greatly minimizes. So, as an example, the gentleman who passed away was parked across the street from the staging area for the vendors. He was just trying to get to his job. It was 5 o'clock in the morning. I almost got hit by a bus myself. I was in a car. The way the thing was set up, there was a bus lane in the middle, but if you're trying to go west on Shelbyville Road and you're parked on what would be the south side, you had to make a hard left, and so the bus lane was also kind of a rescue area until you could cut over to the other two lanes. Suddenly, I'm looking uphill at a bus coming right at me, and I was lucky and was able to avoid it. But I could see the dangers of this business model, and to your point of only having one major access road. I think all these things are on the table about what are we going to do about this before the next tournament hopefully arrives. But I would be very aggressive if I were them, and I think they already are.
I hope so.
Yeah, they're smart guys.
It's a spectacularly wonderful event. And keep in mind, while Sunday was hot, but it was wonderful weather. I mean, it was spectacularly, even on the day where Friday, I had to throw my golf shoes. I wore golf shoes like a lot of people do. I got to throw them away because
they're all covered
in
mud.
They were just completely saturated.
But it was so much fun.
But it was great fun.
It was. And it's such a special event. It's not like it's every year and all that. I mean, it's... Yeah, I mean, and what an asset for our community.
I'm dying to know. You said they got a twinkle in there, like we're thinking about something. I'm dying to know what that might be.
Both gentlemen, and look, these are people of means. They don't have to do this. They did this out of love. They did this because there's a greater good they're doing for this community. I don't believe, you know, the elite part, while it may come off that way, I don't know. That's not their intent. Their intent is to give a gift back to the community for everything this community has done for those four gentlemen. And these are four people who are very smart people, very successful
people. I don't
want
to come across as the curmudgeon in the room, but I have to ask this.
Yeah.
If it's really for the community, it's only one of two ways. Because if it's not, it's for a very elite group, part of the community. So
it's a private club. I get that.
Well, I'm saying, and a very private club. But then when I first came to town, that's what I'm saying. It was very, you couldn't even play it, let alone.
It's hard to play it.
It was hard to be. Then they opened it up some. That's what I thought.
Okay. I still think that element is out there.
So what I'm saying, if you say it's for the community, unless it's going to be for the very, very upper crust of the upper crust, one of two things has to happen. They're going to try and make it accessible, and I don't think that's what they're doing.
No, they're trying to bring more events.
Or that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Or they're going to say there are going to be events there. And the question is, what events could there be? But maybe U.S. Amateurs.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Would that not be awesome? U.S. Women's Amateur. I mean, the USGA has a lot of events.
The other side of that coin
LPGA Tour, LPGA Championship.
What about... But you know, whenever they do that, the members get uprooted. They don't get to play.
That's the whole point. I mean, how unselfish a lot of those. And these are people who are paying a lot of money to be there.
But that's why I'm
that's part of the deal.
They're willing to do that on a somewhat regular basis to bring in.
I can't speak for everybody else. I can only tell you.
Because if they do that, then I'm not disputing that isn't what they're doing. But if they're doing that, then they really are doing something for the committee.
Because I believe that.
You pay all that money and then you can't, for 2 months, you can't play it.
No, they stopped playing last fall. They shut the course down, I think, in October.
That's
and they had
I mean.
A small window for the members in April, like 2 weeks, where they could play. And then it was shut down again.
Because that's what they get in Augusta. You can't ever play Augusta National. It's hardly ever open.
It's open 6 months a year. It closes, for people who don't know, it's kind of weird. They close Augusta the day after the Masters. And it's closed all summer.
That's amazing.
And it opens in the fall for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's the odd. I mean,
the strangest, the main part of what you think would be your golf season, can't play.
Because they're trying to protect
it. Why do they close everything? You think they close the par 3 course too?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That's pretty interesting.
And look, this is a unique little niche in our world of sports. I get all of those things. And still the kind of thing that people can have an influence in a community. So I really admire what they've done.
No, I'm yay to them.
Again, these
I
are
hope
very
it doesn't
smart
come across
people.
Like I'm rooting against them. Certainly not. And as I said, Junior's the only one I know. But
you got to ask questions, right? I mean, it's our job with what we do. Xander Schauffele said this Sunday night. Yeah, you know, hey, that reputation you had, a best player to never win the Masters, or never won a major, rather. And he's like, look, I get this. It's your job to ask questions. It's your job to probe. It's our job to answer them. But if you think that didn't fuel me, I mean, come on. And so it was a great answer, right? But it is our job. This is we're not being malicious in asking questions. We're asking honest questions. Sometimes they're hard questions. And sometimes hard questions are hard to ask because we don't want to come across like we're being, to your point, like we're accusing them of something nefarious. But it's an honest question. What are your plans? Mm-hmm. And when I said that to two of the owners, they took it in the way it was intended. They know my enormous affection for the place and all of that. And I think I've proved that for a long, long time. And so they were honest. Like, yo, we have something in mind, things in mind. But look, I'm reading between the lines. I got the sense there's something going on. What it is, what the details are.
Give us something to look forward to.
Exactly.
Texas says, thanks for all the coverage over the years, Fred. Another one says, going to miss Fred being on the air.
I'm still going to be here. You're still going to put up with me, I think, here for a little while.
Texter says, here's the best way to get the people there. Put them on the creek and send them there by boat.
It's funny. Two guys did that. Did you see that?
No.
There were two guys that were in, what are those little one-man, two-man little boats?
Yes.
So I think it was Saturday. I could be wrong. Suddenly, it was Saturday. I'm by the ninth tee, and Floyd's Fork goes right through there.
Right.
And there are two guys in little one-person kayak things.
I'm trying to get a...
Well, eventually, the police kicked them out. You know why?
Why?
They have no life vests. I'm like, really? That's the reason you kicked them out?
Well,
okay, fair enough.
Could have got in.
That's again, above my pay grade. I didn't know if they were legally able to be there. Is Floyd's Fork on their property part of the... I mean, I don't know how that works.
That's a good question.
Above my pay grade.
Julio, we'll go to break, and then we'll come back. Fred Calgill's with us for this first hour. By the way, I left out Connie Rhodes, which is dumb. As I said, I know I'm missing somebody, and that's another front court player. We did the roster to start the show because he's a high school guy, and he wasn't on my list of transfers, technically, even though he did get released from his situation at Michigan. So a nice roster. An unusual year, quite literally the most unusual year for both Louisville and Kentucky in terms of two highly prominent, historically good basketball programs that had zero. Had to start from absolute ground zero. That's a very, very unusual year, to say the least. All right, we'll come back. It's a Tuesday, ESPN 680 1057.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here on ESPN 680 and 1057.
So, like many, I follow Susan Sweeney Crump, Denny's wife. And I didn't realize she became like as much of a outdoor person as he did.
Yep.
So she just sent a picture 11 hours ago. I fished in pretty much all types of weather. I've fished many, many times in rain and downpours, usually in Alaska. But I'm pretty sure that in the last 25 years, today was the first day I fished in snow.
Oh, gosh. Really?
I don't know where they were. Where would they? Hawaii? I mean, Alaska, Hawaii, Alaska.
Yeah, I don't know. Something's pretty cold.
Beautiful pictures.
Yeah.
Where are they exactly? I don't know. But anyway, I don't fish, so.
Yeah,
I was always afraid if I went fishing. The problem was I was afraid I'd catch something. And then I'd have to, you know, take it off the hook. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, see, I was never much of that, yeah. But I think it's a whole, like, father, son, grandfather,
son. No, I get it. And I'm not, believe me, I get it. You know, we live in Prospect right off the little water there. And so every day I come home and
there's people in there
fishing, and God bless them.
Carrots Creek.
You know, me and my father were like you and your father. It was golf. That was my connecting with nature.
Exactly.
We would go and golf. And to this day, if I smell cut grass on the golf course, that takes me back to when I'm 12 years old. Because that's absolutely the truth. We would go.
It's funny how that
public courses on
smells
Long Island
do that, right?
Oh, that one. I mean, I just always, it was some of my happiest times. I'd go to school. School would end. I would then go for 6 weeks to basketball camp. So I was basically, they were not sleepaways, they were day camps. But but you can't play golf because you're on the whole day. And then there were summer league games at night. So for the first 6 weeks I went to a day camp, I'd go to 1 week of a sleepaway camp. So that's 7 weeks.
I remember, I did that too.
8 weeks off in the summer.
Right.
The seventh week was a basketball camp too, by the way. It wasn't just a camp. But then the 8th week I'd be home. And he would take me to play golf every single day.
Aww.
That was our day. I'd hear the knock on the door. You ready to go? And I'd pop out and we'd go play. And yeah, and it's amazing because when you're young, you get better so fast. It always bothered me. By the end of the week, I was way better than I was at the beginning. And then I was done playing. That was it. That was my golf season. That was pretty much it.
That's frustrating.
So, yeah.
It's funny how smells and the whole father-son thing. I still remember the first time I went to Yankee Stadium. For a Yankees game, like 65, right after they fired Barra and they lost the World Series to the Cardinals. And anyway, not the point of the story. And
what a time to go.
Yeah,
right,
I know.
On the cusp of their suckiness.
Yes, exactly. And live through the people like, you just root for winners. I'm like, oh my gosh, they were so bad for
they
so long.
So
but we go to this, we park in the Bronx, Jerome Avenue, and there's this old Jewish deli. And they walk in and the accents and the smells. And I mean, I was just some kid from upstate New York. I was like, oh, my God. I'm like 7, give or take. But I was with my dad, and we get these big, thick bologna sandwiches.
Oh, man.
And the bread was so – oh, the bread is amazing. And the food was so good. And we'd go to Yankee Stadium because you bring in your own food then. And we sit and watch batting practice. We get there, you know, hours early. We get there early.
Yep.
And in the good seats before we went to the seats we were in. And just sit there and talk and eat. And I'm like – I'm not sure it gets any better than this. I think this is, I'm 7, I'm with my dad, I'm eating great food, and I'm watching these guys who are going to become my heroes, and they're awful. But they were, Horace Clark and those guys,
Why do we always associate Horace Clark? It's so unfair to that guy, but that's who we associate.
Tom Tresh, Danny Cater, I could go through.
Tom Tresh was on some good teams.
He was.
The problem is Horace came in just as they got sucked.
Yeah. Jake Gibbs, Elston Howard. I remember them all. And we keep score. I mean, I had my piece of it. And
absolutely.
I learned how to keep score. And everyone has their story, if they're lucky, about that father. I wish I had that with my kids. But see, things changed. It wasn't – baseball at that time was so part of our culture. And with these kids, it was phones and a million other things. So I never really had that with them. And I felt like I missed something and they missed something because of that. I tried. I took them to sporting events all the time. But never got the traction that – I mean, yeah. And it's so special. I mean, to this day, I'll be watching a Yankees game like I was when they blew the lead last night against Seattle. Like 4-1 and they lose.
Oh, I didn't realize. I went to bed. I didn't realize they lost.
Oh, they got crushed.
Oh, wow.
They gave up like 4 or 5 runs in like the 9th inning. I'm like, what the heck? Anyway, it's like the second blown save of the year, some crazy thing. Of course, I'm watching it then. But regardless, I'm thinking of my dad. I'm like, oh, gosh, I miss you. I truly do. And it's funny how I'm sure many listeners can identify with this, just that how sports can connect us with a particular family member. It could be an uncle, it could be whomever. And you know, Tim Sullivan and I have talked a lot about this too, just how he's a huge Yankees fan and how to this day all of that still so resonates. I mean, we're at the PGA on Saturday talking to Yankees. It was wonderful. I mean, they are literally like game mode about working. He's like, what do you think of the Yankees? I'm like, oh man, it's been amazing. They're first place and second best record in the league, and they're playing
a little
great.
Shekel on them to win the whole thing.
Really?
And you know why? Because I go by weird signs. Like when you bring a guy to New York and he's a high profile guy, His reaction sets the tone for your team. For example, they brought Ed Whitson in, and he hated it. He was a nightmare, and he was terrible, and he was a distraction all year. They brought Randy Johnson in. He was a bit of a jackass.
Yes.
They didn't win. They brought Juan Soto in. He is like a pig in slop. He is having so much fun. He's having a ball.
I was like,
this guy, this is how you win.
He loves the stage.
Reggie Jackson, for all of his knuckleheadedness,
loved
the stage in New York. And they won. So that's what
it's not for everybody. I mean, it's hard. New York is the most demanding place because it's so hard to live there. And everyone is pushed so hard in so many ways. And I've lived a lot of other places, and I'm not trying to diminish any other place, but to have to commute 2 hours a day, I mean, that takes some cojones. It does. I mean, you're living like Western New Jersey, commuting to Manhattan
every day. There are people
that
live in, when I was living there, we were looking to buy a place, and the guy, I was working in Brooklyn, the guy literally was ready to show us houses in the Poconos. I said, why do you say what people do this all the time? There's a bus. You can, you know, if you want to drive, there's a bus. You get it at like 5:15 in the morning. Mm-hmm. It gets you into New York at like 8 o'clock. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you get home at like 8 o'clock if you leave at 5.
And then you start all over again.
Like, no, thank you. That's crazy.
But they can't afford anything else.
No, that's, well, it's kind of like living in L.A. I told you when I was working at ESPN doing the show for the network, they said, you know, you can live wherever you want to because we have affiliates everywhere.
Sure.
So I had gone out to California to do, it was the Super Bowl in San Diego. Mm-hmm. So I loved San Diego. And I was,
it's
like,
a beautiful town.
Oh, my God.
It should be for what it costs to live there.
And I said to Darlene, this would be a great place. And so I went looking, and I told, you've heard the story. I came back and I said, well, the good news is I found a place we can afford. The bad news is in Tijuana. I said, we ain't getting anywhere. We're not getting anywhere near this city.
We're going to live in Mexico. We're going to live in a different country.
Maybe we can afford that. It's crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's funny, though, getting back to your point. The smell for the cut grass, it always reminds to this day, and I'm glad, I hope it will till the day I die, reminds me of going to play golf with Dad. But when I first went to hockey games and baseball games, baseball, the sensory, when you come through that tunnel, Bob Costas talks about it. And I don't know, just something different. Keep in mind, I grew up on black and white television. So
sure.
I walk in and the green of the grass and the colors everywhere. And that's the same thing when you go to a hockey game, the noises.
Oh, yeah.
When you're sitting ringside and there's nobody announcing and you just hear the and the puck when it hits the stick, crack, crack, crack. It's like, wow, it's a very different sensation.
I took my wife, Cindy, to a Rangers game in Nashville against the Predators. This goes back 4 or 5 years. Afternoon matinee on like a Saturday. It was really very cool. And we get on, we have our fun, we go in. What I didn't anticipate was her reaction. She was overwhelmed. Her senses, we walk in, she goes, it's cold in here. I'm like, well, it's a hockey game.
They're playing nice.
She's like, and it was nice outside. She's like, why am I wearing a jacket? I'm like, trust me, you'll want a jacket.
Yes, you will.
And so now, and then it was just sensory overload for her. She's like, the people are so into this. I mean, they're so invested. I'm like, oh, trust me. She goes, this is like what boxing must be like. I'm like, well, it's not quite the same thing, but yeah, I get it. These people are on the edge of their seats, and they're, from the time they go, it's a very physical game.
People would tell me, oh, you can never make hockey go here. I was going to say, when you grew up, was Nashville a hockey town? No, but you know who deserves a lot of credit for that, by the way? A guy named Pete Weber. You know Pete?
I know Pete very well.
Pete really went and helped sell the game to them on the airwaves.
Yes.
He really educated,
good
talked
man
to them.
I've known Pete since he was doing play-by-play for the Buffalo Bisons, I think there was.
Minor league team?
Yes, and I was doing the Rochester Red Wings. The summer of 80.
I didn't know you did the Rochester Red Wings.
One summer of 86 before I came here. I was invited to leave the station I was at and was on the beach. And my friends with the Red Wings said, well, would you mind just sitting in for a little bit? I'm like, I'd love to. So that's how I met Pete. And we've been friends ever since. He's the most friendly guy ever. So fast forward to being here, and then he obviously ended up, you know, he did Bills, he does all this stuff, and then ends up in Nashville, and so we've been friends.
I think he did the Buffalo Sabres before he came to Nashville.
Yes,
I think that's where he was.
And so I'm not sure whenever the Rangers are in Nashville, he will always reach out that I can have a couple tickets if I wish.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, it's, yeah. And I've taken him up on it many times. It's so cool.
To that end, the Rangers.
Yeah, here we are.
Eastern Conference Finals. And you know what the good news is? They're playing the Florida Panthers, who are basically in Miami.
Yes.
Miami is probably 80% transplanted New Yorkers.
Oh, yeah.
So the Rangers
will
have, they'll have home games in both cities.
Right.
That'll be...
Florida's good, though. This is going to be a good series.
No,
I mean, I'm worried. I mean, I won't fit.
No, me too.
And the President's Cup team, the team that wins the best record in the league, has not won the Stanley Cup in forever. And the Rangers have only had one Stanley Cup win since the dawn of man, I think it is, pretty
1940,
much.
1940,
yes.
The chant, the Islander
94
fans used to taunt them. 94, they won. By the way, they're coming out with a 30 for 30 on the 94 Rangers team.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's out yet, but it'll be out soon.
My little nugget on 94 team, Mike Heenan, is an old friend.
How do you know him?
Years and years ago, from 1982 to 86,
Mike Heenan, by the way,
I was in Rochester, New York.
People don't know, he was the coach of that.
Yes. And among my responsibilities for covering sports in Rochester, New York, was covering the Rochester Americans, which was the AHL team, the American Hockey League team, AAA level, basically, of baseball terms, of the Buffalo Sabres. And the head coach of that team was?
Mike Keenan.
Mike Keenan. And in 1983, they won the Calder Cup. And we televised the games and got to know them all really well. I still have some video from that, including being in the locker room after they won the Calder Cup, being doused in champagne.
Wow.
Oh, and I'm like, oh, this is what this is about. This is gross. I've ruined a suit. But we're on live TV. Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, it's incredible. But some of my close friends from there, and Mike was one of them, and he did, he was part of a band.
He played in a band?
Nick and the Nice Guys. Yes, which was the Hootie and the Blowfish of its era. And they were incredible. And apparently it was started when they were all in college together, and Mike was one of those guys. So from time to time, they would play around Rochester and other places. They were really good. So much fun. I mean, very much like Hootie. Very, very, you know, up and fun and party and have a favorite adult beverage. And Mike was one of the singers. He was pretty good.
That's awesome.
I know. So I knew him before he became Mike Keenan, you know, NHL championship coach and all that. And, you know, he's got a rep of being a guy that runs over people, a little like Bobby Petrino that way, I think.
Yeah, he didn't.
He has that sort of Bobby Petrino kind of. Yeah, no, but at the end it was awful. But I tell you what, the man produced winners, and I knew the other side of him. I mean, it's funny how people can be this way, and it's not just hockey coaches or. But sometimes it is with a lot of coaches where they can have that other side where they can let go and have fun for a while. And
And
he was very much that way.
That's cool to know.
Oh, and I got to know him. I've often said that in our business, it's tough to not cross the line. For me, crossing the line is becoming friends with somebody, and he and I did. And that was the first time that I'm like, wow, I see how this could be complicated, because we'd have to cover stories which weren't flattering for the team. And he would get on me about it. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm still trying to do my job here and try to be objective. But it's hard to be a friend of somebody and to do this job
and
in that business.
More so now. It was different back then where, you know, Bob Knight could be friends with that one writer.
The writer for in Bloomington.
I forgot his name.
I'm blanking on his name. The local Bloomington paper.
But
they were very close.
But, you know.
But even that, I'm sure, was a difficult dance because he was a good guy and a good writer. And I'm sure, you know, Bob had his moments. The times I was around Knight, he was always very, and this is as a generalization, he knew who I was. And this goes well into, you know, the later years of his coaching career and then when he was with ESPN. I remember being in Nashville. Louisville was playing Western Kentucky at Bridgestone. And we're down there the night before, and I brought two of our daughters with us, which is me and our daughters. And we're in the place at... what's the Marriott Hotel? The Renaissance Inn.
Yep.
Renaissance Hotel. And they have a second floor bridge there. And there's a little restaurant. You can have lunch and all that. And we'd gotten there early. And so I took the girls in to have a little bite to eat. And it was off hour, like maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's Bob sitting there by himself. And so I walked up and reintroduced myself. He goes, oh, I know who you are. And he was so nice to the girls. He was so engaged. And I'm just like, if people could see the other side of him. You know, he has two very distinct sides. And he was as charming and grandpa-ish as a guy could be. And with me, he was a little more, he was odd because I kept thinking he wouldn't know me from Adam. But I'd been here a long time even then, and obviously it was nice that he even knew that. So, and it was very complimentary, which I was stunned about. And we had a nice chat for 5 or 10 minutes, and then we moved on. But, to that point, being in that weird place.
Yeah, the media, it's a weird dance that the media and the coach that you see every day has to do.
Gotta be.
And some guys learn it, and it's harder, I think, it's again, without minimizing Louisville or any other market, it's harder in markets like New York. And that's why Joe Torre was so good, because he understood that. He understood they had a job to do. They're not my bosom buddies, but doesn't mean we have to be enemies, and he could do that dance with them. Because I believe it was because he was in the media himself for 10 years.
He was, exactly.
So I think he understood it. So he's like, I know what they're here for. Let me give them what they need, and we'll go about our business. And
Kenny McPeak is like that, too. I mean, the trainer for Mystic Dan, who won the Kentucky Derby, we got talking about that a little bit before Derby, a little bit after. And he said the same thing, which is, I know you have a job to do, and I know exactly what you need. I'm going to try to give it to you. And it's not just about that, and I think that's important, but I'm also trying to be an ambassador for the game. And
that's insane.
He really embraces that.
Yeah, they got to do that. I'm going to say goodbye to you.
Yes, I've got
to
go.
And ask you on your way out to corral my producer, because we're still flying here, and we're having a rudderless ship right now. And I believe we're going to have a guest who's going to call in like 3 minutes.
Okay.
And he's got to get
I'm going to go find him right now while
he's here. So.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Thanks. Congratulations on a fabulous career. All right. Fred Calgill with us here. Take a short break in a few minutes. I can't go to commercial because there's nobody to push the buttons on the other side. So we got issues here. But that's kind of the way we roll. So, that's okay. Just, whatever. Just leave us. Not a problem. Not a problem. You and Tulio playing pickleball back there?
I'm working on a promo, and Tanner said he was going to grab a coat. And I told him I'd keep an eye on
grab
the board.
Grab a coat?
No, you go to break right now.
Grab a coat?
Grabbing a coat.
Why?
Or a hoodie. He's chilly.
Well, because you got a pretty important guest, but relatively speaking.
They're moving to 215.
Oh, don't bother telling me that. I hustle Fred. I give him the bum's rush out because I like, we got a guy calling at 1, so you better get your ass out of here and find the producer. So I send him out like he's an intern, and he had no reason to leave. And we were still talking about stuff.
I can go grab him.
No, he's done. He's got to go anyway. It's his last week, Thursday's his last.
Oh, it makes me kind of sad. It's bittersweet.
Yeah. So time waits for no man. So, all right. So there you go.
Dean will join us at 2:15.
Dean from Jan and Dean. And you old-time music buffs will recognize. And you'll know some of their songs, even if you're not an old-time music buff. They had two big hits, Surf City and The Little Old Lady from Pasadena, which is kind of a kitschy
song. What song should we use to introduce him?
I think The Little Old Lady from Pasadena is probably more recognized. But
I know that one.
You might know Surf City, too.
I think I would.
I think a lot of people hear Surf City think it's the Beach Boys. It sounds just like the Beach Boys.
Well, to be honest with you, I thought Little Old Lady from Pasadena was the Beach Boys.
There you go. See, there's a perfect example of what we're talking about, of how...
That California sound.
That's what it was. It was the California sound. We come back, we got things to talk about, and we'll do that with you on the other side. ESPN 680 1057.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.